Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, Jared Faree. Welcome back to the Mere Christianity Podcast. Apologies, I know the first episode said we were working on some intro music. Still don't have that. We need to get Mr. Brandon and Stacy on that as soon as possible. And speaking of him, he and Byron joining us on the phones tonight. What's going on, guys?
Hey, what up, Jared? Hey, what up, Mere Cat?
What's going on, man?
All is well in the world. Been a bit of a crazy week, man, with the Supreme Court decision on gay marriage. I'm possibly thinking about taping a show maybe Tuesday night, if you guys can join me and maybe talk a little bit about that. But tonight, what we wanted to do was have Aaron on the podcast that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, getting lost at sea. So we'll bring him on in just a minute. Byron and Brandon, I know you guys were together tonight. Apologies that I could not make it out to the prayer night, but I did see a little snippet of it on Facebook. Byron, how was that going on tonight?
It was actually really cool. I'm really glad everyone made it out to be a part of it. For us, it's kind of an experiment for us, and as most of you guys know, we're planting a church, and but nobody else knows that, so you can go follow us at Redemption BMT on social media, but don't tell anybody, because...
Was that BLT?
BMT.
Oh, okay.
Beaumont, BMT, yeah.
Not Baker's Lemon, Bacon Lettuce Tomato.
No. But don't tell anybody yet, because we go public with the announcement in about 2 weeks. So we're just kind of doing an experiment, how to hold services, trying to get some interest in some people. One of the hardest things is to get people to pray. I know that that's one of my biggest problems, is I don't find the time in my everyday life. I guess, like, I get so busy, and really what happens is the blessings of God become burdens on our relationships. And so so we created this multi-sensory prayer space, basically, and to be able to immerse ourselves, like, in just kind of everyday life and different stuff like that. So it was interesting. It was good. I liked it. People seemed to like it. Nobody cussed me out and or told me they weren't coming back. So I guess I did all right. I don't know. Brandon, you and your brother did really good.
Oh, I appreciate it. I mean, I always do pretty good. No, man, my brother did awesome. He really carried it tonight. It's hard when you're just when you're trying to create an atmosphere like we had tonight with, you know, in a large room with a large group of people, and there's just an acoustic guitar and a singer, you know. So I was just there kind of adding, you know, some noise and sounds to the electric guitar and stuff. So he really carried it for me tonight. But he did awesome. It was a lot of fun. We both had a good time.
Yeah, and Brandon was wearing a hat in the worship service. And I wanted him to. I almost went up to him to tell him to take it off. Do you think Brandon was sinning by wearing a hat in church?
I know Paul.
Absolutely not.
Our hat won't play, so.
I have no beef with the covered head during service. Maybe I'm wrong, but you asked me, so I'm letting you know.
But his hat was on backwards.
So Ben Roethlisberger. That doesn't add nothing for me. I know some people that it would greatly affect. If you'd like to talk to them and air your grievances, I can connect you to after the show for sure. Well, while you guys were doing proper things, praying and all that jazz, you know, I spent all day Friday in 100-degree heat at Warped Tour in Houston. 80 bands on, what, 9 stages in about 7 or 8 hours. It was pretty impressive feat to behold. Not really my scene. It was funny. I took my dad, who's, I don't know, getting close to 60, obviously not his scene, but some of my friends from Family Force 5 were there, so we went to go hang out for the day, bring them some Louisiana Zone Swamp Pop and kind of hang out with them for the day. And so I bring Dad over there, and, you know, we're standing by, and I think a band called Attila maybe was on stage, screaming and hollering about something or other. And then we walked by another stage, Black Veil Brides, I believe, was playing. And my dad was like, hey, I think I heard that song before. And then we'd walk by another stage, and there's Pierce the Veil. And my dad's like, hey, I think I heard that song too. And he just figured it all kind of sounded exactly the same. And then my buddies from Family Force 5 take the stage and turn it into a dance party in the middle of Warped Tour. Definitely a different kind of scene from the rest of it. But it was a good time. We had fun. We'll talk about it at another time. But tonight we really want to kind of spend some time focusing on Mr. Aaron Rose, who, like we said, talked about a couple of weeks ago on a mission trip to Honduras, got lost at sea in a kayak, and we didn't really know his fate, but he's back and better than ever. And Aaron, welcome to the show tonight, man. What's going on, bud?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well, just hanging out.
So, Aaron, I know that by now you've probably have felt like you've told this story a million times. It's only happened, believe it or not, what, 2.5 weeks ago since you were lost.
Yeah.
And I know that you took the time to go back and listen to the podcast that we recorded, kind of sharing the story from our perspective and, you know, how we kind of went through that Wednesday night and that Thursday morning. So I feel like our audience is probably at least familiar with your story. If you guys want more details than you get tonight, you can go back on iTunes a couple of weeks ago and listen to the podcast titled Lost at Sea. But so, you know, you're out on the kayak, you're lost. I think the thing I'm most curious about, I'll let you kind of start and tell as much of the story as you want, but I think the thing for me I'm most interested in is to hear kind of what it was like alone on the ocean, not knowing if this was the end or just what that was like being in a huge, enormous body of water completely alone. That's kind of what I'm interested to hear about. But why don't you just kind of start? You can kind of tell exactly what happened and as many details are what you want, and we'll jump in a couple minutes here.
Okay. Well, I go kayaking with my brother a good bit. Not so much lately, but when we were down there, we were kind of excited to get to do it again. So we were out in the ocean, and we had a good time and came back. And the next day, he was feeling bad, so I went out by myself. And that was when I got sucked out. I was in the same spot we were the day before, but I got told later the current was like 10 times stronger, and so I wasn't able to make it back like I was the day before. At first, I thought I was fine, actually. Like, I just thought it would take me a little longer than normal to get back, and I'd be pretty tired, but it'd be a fun story, I guess, how I battled the elements. And then my kayak flipped over, and I lost my paddle. And so then I kind of started to figure out that I was up the creek without a paddle. So I pulled myself back in the kayak, and I tried to kind of swim it over with my hands, but that really did nothing at all, so I just kind of kept getting swept out where the current was taking me. At first I was still trying to be kind of calm about it. I figured out pretty quick nobody could hear me, and then I figured if I just kept the island in sight, they'd see me, and then no, they didn't, and it kept getting darker. It got pretty terrifying pretty quick. A lot of people told me like they had this peace where they knew I was going to be okay the whole time, and I think you were one of those people, actually. And I was just thinking, like, that's real nice. I wish I had that, because I really, I felt a degree of peace after I started praying and kind of opening up to God and worshiping, but it was more like an acceptance of whatever came. It wasn't ever like I knew I was going to be fine. I knew there was a very real possibility I wasn't going to make it home. And for me, someone that likes to plan a lot of things out and kind of have things set the way I want them, that not knowing, the feeling of uncertainty was probably the worst part, because, like, there was just nothing I could do but wait and see what happened. Being out there and just looking around, not being able to see any land and maybe a few lights far off. When I saw that the boats and the lights that I saw had stopped because the search had been called off for the night, the waves were getting so large that they were all I could see. And that was just hard to deal with, just, knowing that I might be out there and never get back on land again. It was just, I think it would have been a lot easier if I'd had someone with me. But at the same time, not having anyone with me forced me to put my trust in God for that and to rely on Him, because I had no one else to talk to. So I did a whole lot of praying that night. A lot of yelling too, to be honest. I got pretty raw with God, but it's just hard to put into words what it feels like to be so utterly helpless like that and have literally nothing in your power you can do but just depend on God to do whatever He sees is best. It was rough.
I think it's interesting that you're talking about being out there and and just kind of being alone and kind of having a real moment with God. You know, I think back to the Old Testament of an idea of Jacob wrestling with God and that. And I also remember, you know, when I walked into the sanctuary at Community when we heard about it and we were going to, you know, have this prayer time for you. I remember refreshing my memory from a class we were doing, reading in Genesis of Abraham pleading with God over Sodom and Gomorrah and just talking to him about how if he could find 50 righteous people, would God spare the city? And then he said, if I may be so bold to find 40, or what about 30 or 20 or 10? And I remember going in there kind of pleading with God that even if the worst had already happened, that God was still capable of picking you up, putting you back in the kayak, writing it, and breathing life back into you. Now, obviously, we didn't know what was going on, but I remember kind of pleading with God. And you know, when I hear you say you're kind of hollering at God, the thing I think of is, like I said, of Jacob, you know, wrestling with God in the Old Testament. Is that kind of what you felt like? You were just kind of pleading your case before him, or wrestling with him, or what was that like?
Yeah, it was very similar to that, honestly. I mean, you know, it was a struggle. I had to deal with my faith a lot too. I mean, you know, there were times I didn't know if I was just yelling at the sky, but I had nothing else to do, so I kept on doing it. And then, you know, there were times I felt a sense of peace, especially when I actually decided to put on an attitude of worship. I sang some songs all out there and just tried to focus because, you know, I realized if anything was going to get me through, it was going to be him. But yeah, I mean, I would say things like, you know, I'm only 18 years old. This isn't how I wanted my life to go. I thought you had more for me. What happened to all those plans I thought you had for me? And you know, it was just tough. You know, people talk about your life flashing before your eyes, and I definitely had to go through some of that. And just trying to figure out if I was the kind of man I wanted to be, if I was, you know, if this was the end, if I was actually ready to go face God, and just coming to the conclusion that I really wasn't. Not like any sense of salvation wise, but just, you know, there's more of a person I wanted to become. And not knowing if I was going to have that chance was kind of disheartening because I could look back on the time I'd lived and see ways I could have spent that better and things I could have done differently to have a more Christ-oriented life. But, you know, when I was at the end there, I wished I would have done.
So we have all these people praying for you, and you've heard the stories, and you can kind of piece together like a little bit of a timeline. I mean, I don't know if you had a watch or a way to check the exact times, but you've kind of been able to piece together this timeline of, you know, kind of, I guess, the big moments of the night, you know, seeing the boats kind of turn around that you could kind of see out, you know, on the water that weren't getting out far enough to you from the sea kind of calming. You know, what was it like watching the sunrise? I know that you had said that, I think your dad had mentioned that you had told him that, you know, you'd wanted to go out and see the sunset and that maybe another day you could go see the sunrise. I mean, did that bring a renewed sense of hope that now that maybe that it was daylight that you were actually going to come out of this alive? What was that like when you finally started to see the sun break over the water?
Well, you know, at first, because the whole night I've been waiting for the sun to come up because I knew once it got darker they weren't going to find me that night because it was just getting so dark. And when it got too dark for me to see the island, actually, I just assumed I'd see it when the sun came up. So when I saw the sun start coming up, I got kind of excited because I was thinking, you know, okay, I'll be able to see the island. They'll be able to see me pretty quickly, and I'll be getting out of here. And then, so I felt that hope, but then as the sun got higher up and the waves kind of pushed me up where I could see, I realized the island was nowhere in sight. And I got so turned around in the night, I thought I was on the other end of the island from where I started. And pretty soon after the sun came up, a current, a really strong current, like I couldn't even change the direction I was going. It was honestly the strongest one I've had to deal with the whole time. But it wasn't throwing me around, it was just pushing me straight east. And because of where I thought I was, I thought that was just pushing me farther out to sea, like out to the open ocean. And so, yeah, farther away from where I needed to be. And that was really difficult because, you know, I tried to fight against that for several hours and I was making no progress just because I didn't want to be getting farther away from the rescue. But, you know, at a certain point, I kind of, you know, just realized I couldn't control where I was going. And so I just looked up to God and I was like, all right, I'm going to let this take me, and I pray this is the right direction, but, you know, your will be done here. And I just let it drag me east. And it turns out they found me west of the island, so that actually brought me closer to where I started, close enough where the planes actually didn't end up finding me. So that was definitely a God thing, because that current came out of nowhere. I was not moving east before that. Seeing the sun come up, I love watching the sunset, but I think there's something prettier about the sunrise, because it's not growing darkness, it's bringing light. And, you know, when it first started coming, I did feel that kind of renewed sense of hope, and it is just a beautiful thing to watch out there, watching it play off the water and slowly starting to be able to make out what's even beneath the surface of the water, the fish all around and stuff. But, I think not seeing the land was pretty tough right then, but as it got brighter, I knew that if they were going to find me, it was going to be during the day. And so I had some hope that would be the day, because I realized pretty quickly I didn't have a whole lot of time to spare.
So now, with like my experience of my brother used to skydive a lot, and you know, my experience with that, you often hear the plane coming back around before you'll see it. So did your ears and eyes, I'm sure they played tricks on you in terms of mirages, or maybe thinking you saw something, or was that really something or whatever, but what was it kind of like when you started to, you know, did you hear the planes before you saw them, or what was that like and after the sun had came up?
Yeah, I definitely had to deal with that during the night especially. And then in the day, the sun got so bright on the water, I couldn't really see much of anything. So I had to rely on my ears, honestly. But, yeah, I mean, you know, there's like a constant ambient noise out there. It's because the way the waves are moving. And so at first it would be hard for me to hear anything. But then I'd kind of hear this buzzing sound that was distinct from the waves, and I figured out what that was pretty quick, and I could look up and see like a little white dot moving across the sky. I'd wave at it, and you know, the first four times they didn't see me, and so that was pretty disheartening. But yeah, I would just lay down in the kayak and close my eyes and just listen for that buzzing sound, because anytime that sound happened, I knew that was another chance that I would have to get out of there.
All right, Byron and Brandon, I want to just check real quick. We're having a little bit of audio difficulties. Byron, are you there still?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, I'm getting a bad echo on him.
Yeah,
Brandon, are you there?
Okay.
Yeah, man, I'm here, finally.
All right, so Brandon doesn't sound as bad. Byron's is a little off. So I know you guys have been listening there for a second. Any questions for Aaron before we get to the actual point of that feeling of elation of being rescued about anything he said so far? Byron, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I was thinking... was there any time that you almost got out of the kayak or like wanted to just take a run for it or swim?
I realized when I was getting drug out that I could not swim back and the kayak would keep me afloat. After the plane had come by and left, because where I thought I was, I figured they were just kind of doing a sweep and they weren't going to come back by. And so at that point, I'm thinking I've been swung out into the ocean and they believe they've searched this area and they're not coming back. And so for me, I think that was the point I thought about, do I really want to die of thirst out here? I could speed this up a little bit. So that was the only time I really thought about getting out of the thing. But
yeah, because you know, your dad said at church that if you would have gotten out during that like that first little rift, that you would have like that was the worst thing you could have did, huh?
Oh yeah, I would have drowned for sure. That current was way too strong. But yeah, I mean, I realized, you know, to get out of that kayak was like certain death, and if I could stay in it, you know, there maybe I would have to experience something slow and painful. But it would mean I hadn't given up hope that I was still going to be rescued, and I didn't get to that point. I was willing to just to do the weigh in to take the risk, just because I hadn't given up hope that someone was going to find me.
Yeah.
All right. So
and never mind. I'm not going to ask another one. I get one question, right? That's it.
You can have it. It's hard with us not all being together. I want to give Brandon some time with the audio issues I'm having. I'm trying to balance everybody out. So Brandon, I mean, your thoughts here while we got Aaron on the line?
Yeah, man. This is the first time I've been on the line, so not sure what I missed the first few minutes. But man, I just want to say that awesome. Everything worked out for the best. That you're okay and you made it back home. I heard when I came on the line, y'all were talking about, that the joy of kind of seeing the first, seeing the sun come up, seeing the sun rise. And, as soon as you said that, the first verse that came to my mind is Psalm 35, where, it says that weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. That's just like such a awesome reality to attach to that verse there. But, yeah, that and I had a question. Have you ever seen the movie Open Water?
I haven't.
Okay, never mind. Don't
he
watch
lived it.
It. The movie doesn't Casper end as well.
All right. So Aaron. So the plane eventually does recognize you. I mean, did they tell you that they saw you and kind of made a sweep around? Or, I mean, I guess it was a helicopter that actually pulled you out. What was the actual rescue process like? And that feeling of I can only imagine utter relief of knowing that there had to be a point where you realized, okay, now they've seen me, and the kind of wave of emotion that came over you. Did it hit you when you realized they were coming back for you? Did it hit you when you saw the helicopter, or did it hit you, in the helicopter? What was that like?
Well, to start with, they were searching at about 800 feet, and they wanted to know what to look for, like what a kayak looked like out in the water. So they swung by the resort to see. And they realized 800 was way too high, and they'd never spot me. So they dropped to 500, and I think that was about the time the fifth plane came out. And they had dropped down to 500, and I saw another little white dot in the sky, and I heard the buzzing sound. And so I started waving my arms again and yelling, but this was the fifth time, so I was kind of starting to think they wouldn't see me. I was kind of starting to realize how big the ocean was and how little that the kayak was, even though it was bright yellow. And then all of a sudden, I saw it start getting closer and closer, and then it wasn't just a dot. I could make out wings and the shape of the plane. And, I kept yelling, and they went, right over me and then started circling around. And once they did that, I knew they had seen me. And, I can't even describe the feeling of that just utter feeling of relief. And all the tension I've been holding in that night just kind of was let go. That was the first time I cried, was when I realized they had found me. I really just couldn't control myself. I was, I realized I would get another chance to live my life, to become who I want to be, and to see my family again. And, just getting to know I'd see another person after I didn't was pretty incredible. And then the second plane came by after a little bit, and they were circling around too. And then the helicopter came in, and it was the U.S. Southern Command from that they're stationed in Honduras, and they had a guy cable down and grab me. And that was pretty funny, actually, because the helicopter was stirring up the water, and they're used to just pulling people out of the water, not people off a kayak. So when the blades were stirring up the water, it would shoot me off in the opposite direction. So they had to that out, and I had to eventually just get out and swim to the guy, but they got me up there and wrapped up, and it was just incredible feeling.
No, and I'm going to ask you about being reunited with your parents in just a second, but one of the things I wanted to ask you is, I'm not sure how many just a quick question, how many notifications were on your phone or your Facebook when you actually got back on shore?
My Facebook app crashed and I had to delete it. I haven't re-downloaded it yet. I had to use my uncle's computer. I had four iMessages, and then I decided to turn on my cell phone signal so I could text my best friend because he didn't have an iPhone. And I got probably at least 50 more text messages. And then I started getting voicemails and Twitters, and it was, I lost count, honestly. It was a ridiculous amount. There were, Facebook had, like, I think there's a limit to how many notifications it'll show at once, because it was, like, hovering at 99, and I'd go down, there were just hundreds of posts and stuff. I still never got to the end of them all.
Well, and, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is that, so a lot of people obviously were touched in a pretty powerful way from this whole story, probably in ways they couldn't even imagine. And I think it speaks to the supernatural experience of what happened for a lot of different people. There was this, like, fiber of the supernatural kind of woven through the entire thing, just in the ways and the impact and the realness of it, that it impacted a lot of people. But I've also seen, you know, and I don't want to call them names or anything, but I've seen people who kind of fit the definition of a Facebook troll, kind of just getting on there and being like, oh, really? Well, where's the thanks for the rescue? Viewers, you know, not an invisible man in the sky who obviously had nothing to do with this, but people who worked tirelessly to rescue that person. Now, I'm not going to make light of the human effort that was given. I know you and your family have expressed gratitude and feel like y'all can never repay those people for all that they gave and all that they did to rescue you. But, you know, I, for one, just in the sense of the peace that I had about it, that's not normal for me. You know, just to give you guys a little quick story, our worship pastor is leaving to go to Bethel, and they wanted to sell their house, and they listed their house at this certain price, and they're like, you know, we're really trusting God that he's going to sell it. And I was like thinking to myself, they're never going to sell that house. Well, they had a cash buyer bought it about 9 days after they listed it on the market. So that's a total God thing. And I didn't have any faith in that. And that's why I feel like for me, especially the peace that I got after the first time that Chester and I prayed up at the church was supernatural. I don't have peace like that normally about things. I'm a realist and different things like that. So what would you say to people that say, you know, Aaron, it's cool that you have faith and it's cool that you think that God rescued you out there. You know, what would you say to someone who doubts that this was a miracle and not just, you know, a fortuitous event that had a happy ending?
Well, I will say, I can't give enough credit to Mark Flanagan. He's the manager of the resort I was staying at. He's the one who got everything organized. To the local community that went out in boats and planes and spent their fuel. And these people that depend on the cruise ships for a living and gave up, you know, hours they could have been making money to go look for me, that, you know, they gave up their livelihood for that time for me. And I can't say thank you enough to that. Even in the U.S. military that actually got me out of the water. I know when we landed the helicopter, they had 3 minutes of fuel left, and they're not supposed to land with less than 30. And so they were really taking a big risk to get me. I can't say thank you enough to that. At the same time, though, you know, the track record of this kind of thing statistically says I shouldn't have made it back. I mean, this kind of thing, like at night in a kayak by myself, has happened, I think I said, 7 times before, and they've only found the kayak, and sometimes they haven't even found that. They've never recovered the person or even the body. And me, not only did they find my body, but I was alive. And not only, like, just seeing the pictures of, like, me down there in the kayak, it's such a small point. Even though they were right over me, I think God really had to direct his eyes just to see where I was. Because you can look at the video, and you have to hunt for it. And when you're in a plane jetting across the water with only a limited field of vision, you don't really have time to be hunting. You have to scan really quickly. And somehow, in that scanning, he saw me. You know, and not only that, there were a lot of really specific prayers that God answered, like about sometime in the middle of the night, the waves and the wind died down. I can't say for sure what time it was. It was after midnight, and people were praying for that about two. And I think that, I don't know exactly, but I think those times matched up pretty well. I know Chester Moore was praying for dolphins to be near me so that they would keep off sharks, and I saw blow holes going off not too far away. Some people were praying I'd have light at night, and the moon was really bright. The clouds cleared off midway, so I had the stars, and there were even some sort of plankton around the kayak that were glowing. Like, this is really all these specific things that lined up. And then even my dad prayed I wouldn't be out there longer than 9, and they found me, like, almost exactly on the dot at 9. And, you know, the people were a huge part of this, and I think they definitely partner with God in it. But I think the specificity of the prayers, you know, the timing, and just the fact that I was found when so many other people weren't found just really speaks to the fact that God had a huge role to play in this. And I would be remiss if I didn't give any credit to him.
All right, Brandon and Byron, I'm going to kind of turn it over to you guys here. I've taken up quite a lot of the time. We've got about 15 minutes to go. I'll start with you, Byron. Any thoughts here for Aaron about the story that we haven't touched on already?
Yeah, I got two questions. One, did they get the kayak back?
No, they left that. So that's going to wash up somewhere.
We need to be more specific with our prayers. I mean, you get the kayak back.
Exactly.
I don't even know if you got to keep it or what, you know? Like,
put that in the backyard.
Yeah.
But maybe it'll show up in Galveston.
There you go. So you know what? So for those guys who are like Facebook trolls or whatever we didn't want to call them, I was thinking about this. You know, it's so easy to get on social media or whatever and just blast. They're like, well, what about that? Well, I mean, the church community, we actually like took offerings and donations to pay back the fuel, and now there's no way we could repay the time and all that stuff. But I mean, like, we also were generous in that way back to the Honduras people in the island of Roatan, and the best that we could as well. And so all times people get on, they're like, well, what about this, what about that, but they actually don't do anything. They just say stuff. And so yeah, I was just thinking about how people just all the time just kind of try to be critics and stuff when they have actually no skin in the game. And so, I mean, working with those people as well. But I did have a question for you. We all walk through these parts in our life to where, you know, you were saying over the hours, like, you curse God. Like, you got pretty rough with God. Not cursed him, but you got pretty raw with him, is I think what you said. And we all go through that in our lives. But you kind of went through an entire lifespan of doubt and blessings and like all this stuff in a 9-hour period. So what were some of the things, like, did you question your faith? As you questioned your faith, what was it in those places that kind of kept bringing you back to place your trust in him? And like you said, just to kind of go with him as he redirected not only your kayak, but also I guess now your life.
Yeah. Well, when I was out there and I started getting pulled away, when the waves were real big earlier in the night, I started just worshiping. I think the first song I sang was Amazing Grace, and that brought me just a measure of peace. And like I said, it wasn't, oh, I'm going to make it out of this. It was more just acceptance of I didn't know what God's will was. I didn't know what was going to happen. But whatever that was, whatever that meant, I was accepted in that. Like, if it was my time, then there was nothing I could do about it except just be prepared. And if it wasn't, then there's still nothing I could do but just wait it out. And that brought me a sense of peace. Later in the night, there were times I started to lose hope. But, you know, there were times I did definitely question my faith and wonder if I was talking to the sky or if I was actually talking to God. And, you know, God kind of brought back to my life, to my mind throughout my life, just ways I've seen him touch people and I've seen him move. And the personal experiences I have that lead me to faith in God. And then, you know, lastly, I thought about the peace that I had when I started singing that same night. You know, and I realized, yes, there is a God out there. I don't know what his plan is, but I know he cares about me, and I know he's got something in store for this. And so I just, you know, I just honestly say, God, I trust you. Whatever comes next, if I die tonight, I know I'm going to be with you. And if I make it out, I trust you that you're able to use this somehow. And, I didn't make it out, obviously, and I have been able to see already just the way he's used the story to touch people. I've gotten message after message of people just thanking me for putting my story out there and telling me what it meant to them. And people tell me it brought them back to faith and stuff, or made them believe in prayer again. And, you know, I think it's just a good example. God works everything together for evil. and I saw, I'm sorry, God works evil things together for good. What was intended for evil, he turns around and uses his beautiful plan to bring glory to his name.
All right, so Brandon, I'm going to toss it to you here for a little bit, and then we'll have some final thoughts wrapping up. But what you got for us, Brandon?
Yeah, well, first, that goof up right there that reminded me of this morning at church, our worship pastor said during one of the higher points in our worship service, he said that Christ is still in the grave. and our associate pastor gave him a nod, and he, you know, oh, whoops, Christ is not in the grave, sorry.
I kind of got ahead of what I was trying to say. So.
Sometimes it's good to say things like just to make sure people are paying attention, though, so make sure people are awake.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's funny. But, I think one of the craziest things for me throughout the whole event, you know, we all probably come from different theological backgrounds, and even currently, you know, we stand in different theological backgrounds. But when it comes to like the Facebook people, and it wasn't just that, this wasn't just a Facebook thing, ABC News was picking this up, Good Morning America, CNN, I mean, huge media outlets were picking up the story and stuff, and so I tended to kind of, for once, avoid the Facebook nonsense, even though that's where I typically get, all my information for news and, what's going on in the world. Just going through, like, the ABC News website, you go through those comments, and it's the same kind of thing from the people about, like you said earlier, Jared, why are we congratulating, this invisible pie in the sky when we need to be thanking the workers? And for me personally, I just look at this as such a prime example of, just God's sovereignty. There's no area where we have to where we thank God, but we don't thank the workers, or we thank the workers and we don't thank God. We thank God, and at the same time, we thank the workers. God is sovereign over the situation, but at the same time, human beings were very much responsible for the actions that took place. And so I think this is just an amazing display of, God's sovereignty and the way that he operates in the world in action, just a prime example. You read passages like, the 45th chapter of Isaiah and things like that, that God's in control of these situations, but we still have responsibility and obligation. So
was that a question?
Oh yeah, no, that wasn't a question. Oh yeah, I do have a question. So I have two questions. One of them is more serious than the other one. The first one is, I don't know, I wonder if anybody asked you this. Did anybody ask you if you could have one book with you, what would it be?
No one asked me that.
Besides the Bible?
Brandon, how are you? Good Lord. I was going to bring it back to books.
Okay.
I always got to bring it back to books.
I was actually in the middle of one before I got out there. And so, that would have been nice to finish. I did finish it today, actually, so that was cool. But
what book was that?
It's called The Great Divide. It was just kind of examining the way history developed between the New World and the Old World. I like to read 99 Amazon books that no one else buys.
I was thinking something like how to swim long distances or fend off sharks or
something practical. Yeah, that'd be nice too.
My second question was, did it ever cross your mind, like, okay, so say, maybe they don't find me, I'm out on the water for a few days, and then I end up like Tom Hanks on Castaway on a deserted island. Did that scenario ever cross your mind, like, I'm going to grow out my beard and my hair and meet Wilson?
He's already growing out the beard.
Yeah, you already got the beard's rocking pretty good.
I'm working on that. They're going to make me shave it for college, so I'm trying to enjoy it while I can.
You're a man! You get to change your beard.
Right.
Come on, man. What college are you going to?
I know there's not really a whole lot of deserted islands out there, so that didn't really cross my mind. I figured if I could get on any sort of island, I could just find someone I could talk to. So I was kind of hoping I'd land somewhere.
Yeah.
But, even still, if it was deserted, though, I'd have a better chance of staying alive than out there with no water or anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Aaron, you don't have to answer this one. Oh, I'm on mute.
No, you're not.
Am I on mute? Am I on mute? Oh, I'm not on mute. I can't hear me. Okay. Hey, you don't have to answer this one. But could you tell me a little bit more about does the peeing on yourself really work? Is that true?
Okay. Yeah, I guess.
In 3 minutes or less, not to rush you, but I just don't want to get caught. So you got 3 minutes or less.
I was trying to hand paddle to get myself out of that eastern current, and all of a sudden I felt something sting me on the hand, and I yanked my hand out of the water, and it was like the worst wasp sting I felt in my life, and I figured out what it was pretty quick, and I didn't have anything with me, so I figured, well, I'd see if that worked. So I peed on my hand, and that was instant relief, and it healed up in a couple days. It didn't hurt again, so... Yeah, that actually does. So. I highly recommend that.
I think he's passed on it twice. I think he's not going to answer that. So, well, Aaron, listen, man, we're going to get you out of here on time tonight. We got a couple of things we need to wrap up and everything. But it's good to see you, my man. It's been nice to see you around town. I know you've been extremely busy. I know you're getting ready to head out to camp next week. So we definitely appreciate you taking the time for us tonight. And we wish you all the best, man. We look forward to seeing, like you said, you know, you to become the man that you want to be before you stand before God. So we definitely appreciate your time tonight, Aaron. And thanks a lot for joining us, bud.
All right, yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. We'll see you later, bud.
All right, see ya.
See ya.
So, man, I am going to be honest with you guys. I teared up a little bit just hearing him talk about that relief of being found, you know, the way he kind of put it in his words. And I go back to a post I read, you know, a long time ago that talks about just, you know, being in the presence of God or being separated from the presence of God after death. And if you think of every good feeling and every right thing that you've ever experienced in your life and just multiply, there you go. I speak English very well. If you kind of multiply that by, you know, a million, those good feelings, and then if you want to know what it's going to be like to be in hell separated from him, you take every bad feeling you've ever had and multiply that by a million. The feeling that Aaron had to have had, if you can even try to put yourself in that situation, the instantaneous relief and joy that flooded over him when he was able to realize that he had been rescued, you know, that's just a shadow of what it will be like one day to be in the presence of God. So that's kind of what I kind of took away from all of that, kind of my final thoughts on everything. Byron, we'll start with you. Final thoughts for the night in the final couple minutes we got here tonight.
That was beautiful, Jared. That was beautiful. I really like the way you just kind of really summed that up, brought it all together. I'm just kidding. Yeah, that's exactly how it felt as well. It was good. It was a great moment of... whenever I found out, I was like, yes. And I felt the celebration and participating in that to the church. I just think that for us as a church, like I was saying the other day, is that to live every day like we're the search and rescue team for God, that there are people who are lost all around us, and that, you know, we get to go and to save God's lost children and bring them back home, and everyone has a story to tell. Just kind of recapturing that missional attitude as the church, I think, really awaken something in all of us to remember prayer does work and we got a job to do. So go make some disciples and go reach the lost.
All right, Brandon, as we seem to do every week, you got like the last 90 seconds, my man.
Yeah, that's okay. You know, just saving the best for last. You know. I am on here, right?
Yes, you're on.
I can't hear myself. Jared's terrible board engineer tonight. No, I think it's cool. You know, a verse that kept coming to my mind, I didn't bring it up while he was on the line, but, you know, I'm just happy to see that he's gotten back and his faith in Christ is still strong. You know, there's people who've come out of these situations that I've known personally who, you know, some who weren't believers beforehand and they went through something like this and it made them doubt God even more than before, you know, this tragic event happened, even though they were rescued or saved out of it or something glorious happened because of it, you know. And that's with Aaron to go into this and come out with his faith in Christ and even stronger than before he went in, you know, just brings to mind Philippians 21 through 22, you know, just, you know, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain, you know. And if he's going to continue to live, then that's fruitful labor for Aaron. You know, he's going to tell his story. He's going to let people know that, hey, God is good and God rescued me, and that this wouldn't have happened without God's intervention, without his plan in place. So it's just, it feels good to, you know, just to hear him, to know that he's going to tell his story and that he's going to use it to share the good news, to share the gospel with people.
All right, guys. Well, we definitely appreciate it. As always, we're probably going to get cut off here, but I just want to remind you guys to join us and study the word.